This is Word on the Streets, a podcast about the Buttles and Indian Corridor Improvement Project. This podcast is created by the City of Midland, Michigan, and produced by the MCTV Network. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 2 of Word on the Streets, a podcast about information, updates, and perspective on the Buttles and Indian Corridor Improvement Project in Midland, Michigan, and beyond. I'm your host, Katie Geyer. So you all know you haven't heard from us much this season, and that's honestly because there's really not been a whole lot to talk about on the Buttles project. But we do have some other street projects that we can talk about. So today I'm happy to have back with me again our Director of Planning and Community Development, Jacob Kane. Welcome back, Jacob.
Thanks, Katie. Nice to be here.
All right. So last time you were here, Jacob, that was back in April, which was 6 months ago. And we were talking about the potential two-way restoration of Ashman and Rod Streets. We're still talking about it now. It's still going through the process at the city council level. What's been going on since we last talked in April?
Sure. So we've been very busy on a variety of projects, including this one. And the work that we've been undertaking since our last conversation has been primarily around gathering input from the community on this project, sharing information about the project with the community so folks can learn more, and then working with a variety of the city's boards to provide their review of the project and make a recommendation to City Council so that ultimately City Council is equipped to make a decision, a final decision on the design of these streets in the near future.
Yeah, so we've seen this come back to some of our boards and commissions a couple of times in the last few months. Can you talk a little bit more about that process and kind of what happened at City Council? I believe it was back in July when they referred this back to our boards.
Sure. So at the early spring, we had our primary community engagement activities, 5 open house sessions throughout Center City and downtown, and a public input survey, bringing those results back to City Council. In June and July, we ultimately recommended that council make a referral to our Downtown Development Authority, the Center City Authority, and the Planning Commission so that those groups could review that public input that was gathered and they could make their own review and recommendation to City Council. And so those boards have been having their own public input and engagement sessions over these last few months and then ultimately deciding what their final recommendation would be and why. And I think digging into the why is probably the most interesting part of this to understand the thought process of these three boards that have different perspectives. So the localized perspective of the Downtown Development Authority and Center City Authority, and then the broader perspective that the Planning Commission brings in terms of thinking about the future of Midland.
Okay. So if you want to watch all these meeting videos, presentations, the reports on the open houses, everything that we've had available to date, you can find all of that at cityofmidlandmi.gov/ashmanrod. And we're also going to link to all of that on our podcast website, which is cityofmidlandmi.gov/corridors. So you kind of touched on this already, but I want to make sure listeners really understand what a resolution means of support when it comes from some of these boards and commissions. So they took the recommendation from City Council. They examined this project, it's my understanding, within a very specific scope of what they do as a part of local government. There was some public input provided to each of these groups throughout this process, and those boards take that stuff into account. But is it safe to say that the perspective of each of these boards is unique and it's a lot more narrow than what City Council typically looks at?
I would say particularly with regard to Downtown Development Authority and Center City Authority, they're looking at specific geographies of the community and their general focus is on developing economic growth and tax base within those districts. They have a very unique perspective on these projects because these projects have really been initiated in part out of work they've done planning for the economic vitality and long-term success of their individual districts. And so with regard to downtown and the downtown streetscape plan that's been partially implemented by the city along Main Street, there are recommendations within that plan from 2016 that talk about creating two-way traffic patterns on both Ashman and Rod Street for a variety of reasons, as well as looking at the Center City redevelopment plan adopted in 2018 and earlier plans for Ashman Circle and Center City going back really to the 1960s, looking at how do we improve the convenience of access to businesses and shops in that district, and how do we improve traffic flow and circulation more generally through the central part of Midland. And so they were looking at it primarily through that lens. The Planning Commission really has a holistic lens. So the Planning Commission's job is to think about the entire community, They're not limited to a particular district geography. And let's remember, they're the body that adopted the major street report that resulted in the creation of these one-way systems to begin with back in 1958. And so they were able to take the input of both the Center City Authority and the Downtown Development Authority into account, as well as the public input and all of the other studies and plans that have helped to helped us to get to this point of making final recommendations to City Council on the project, and to do it in a more holistic way, because we know these corridors do service downtown and Center City, but they also service the entire community, as well as residents and business owners that are located along the corridors, but not within those districts.
Sure. And I think it's important to mention as well that both the DDA and CCA passed resolutions in support of two-way restoration in September, and then the Planning Commission at its most recent meeting on October 12th passed a resolution in support of two-way restoration as well to restore these to two-way traffic. So I want to talk a little bit about the October 12th meeting, because that was kind of the final piece before we anticipate that this is going to go back to City Council. So you presented this project to the Planning Commission several times over at this point. I really encourage everybody to watch that meeting. There was a lot of great information shared. There was a lot of great discussion. And again, you can find that link on the podcast website under this episode, and you can find it at cityofmidlandmi.gov/ashmanrod. And you can listen to an audio-only version as well on the MGTV Government Affairs podcast channel, which is probably where you found us as well here. So we've discussed the reasons for considering this project many times over at this point. We talked about it the last episode. We even talked about it on this podcast as far back as almost 2 years ago in the first episode of season two. So I don't want to rehash those a ton again. But just so the people that maybe are tuning in for the first time or are new to the community, those reasons have not changed. Calming traffic in the corridors by reducing speeding, wrong-way driving, increasing safety for pedestrians and non-motorized users, improving the navigability and the connectivity, like you said, throughout the entire community, as well as through these business districts where the corridors touch, and to even improve response time for emergency and public service personnel. But one of the most immediate benefits that we will see if a two-way restoration is completed is better connectivity and navigation for road users. That's going to be something that's pretty immediate. You had some good practical examples at your October 12th presentation that I think I've actually lived out a few times in like real scenarios. So can you share a couple of those? Because I think those are really helpful for people to consider.
Sure. And I think from the Planning Commission's perspective, a big part of our conversation was around making this community easy to navigate. And we do know via multiple studies, including the recent OHM study, that we can accommodate two-way traffic without any negative impacts on traffic flow through the districts. The traffic volumes are so low on these streets that they're more than able to accommodate two-way traffic and still have an abundance of capacity and provide adequate traffic flow. So as we were really thinking about how can we improve connectivity, I'll give two quick examples that I gave at the Planning Commission. So one is, you know, traveling down Saginaw Road into Ashman Circle. As we know today, Ashman Circle has one-way traffic flow around it, and there are limitations on how you can access certain businesses. And so early in my time in Midland, I was attempting to access a business on Ashman Circle, happened to miss my turn, not realizing that I needed to make a turn in order to access the circle, and attempting to double back, you know, was taken on over a mile detour just to get back to the circle in order to access that business. And so certainly, you know, very inconvenient. It happened that we were very much interested in visiting that business, and so we were willing to take the detour. But convenience matters for most businesses and for shoppers who are looking to take advantage of those businesses. The other example I'll give is just kind of a silly one, but on my lunch break one day early in my time in Midland, I stopped to get gas at the Speedway station at Dartmouth and Saginaw. And trying to travel downtown from Dartmouth and Saginaw, it's a very complicated and really, frankly, convoluted routing that one would take to efficiently get back downtown. And so I think the thing that strikes me as the strangest is making the contra-flow turn onto Rod Street, where you're actually traveling against traffic in front of the law enforcement center to Nichols Street over to Ashman. Not very intuitive. You know, it's certainly not signed in a manner that will let you know that that's how to get to Ashman Street. I know a lot of folks in the community that we've talked to have mentioned that rather than do that, a lot of folks cut through the Rite Aid and Kroger parking lots to access Ashman Street, which is probably not ideal from a circulation perspective for those businesses. But those are just kind of two examples of some of the oddities that this one-way system requires in order to be even semi-functional for circulation. And certainly, if you're not terribly familiar with these, and even if you are, they still fail to provide direct access to businesses.
Sure. So if you are listening on the audio-only version, we've got some physical maps that you can take a look at. If you visit the corridor's website, you can take a look at these. And it is kind of an interesting concept when you look at it as the route would be mapped out. In your head, you might not think that it's that big of a deal. But when you start to look at just the sheer area that you have to cover in order to accommodate essentially one-way traffic on these streets and get where you need to go, it's pretty startling. So you've kind of mentioned this already, but we can sum it up pretty easily. There's simply no reason for these streets to be one-way traffic. There was at one point an anticipation that there would be needed one-way traffic flow through here for traffic handling purposes. We obviously don't see that in this corridor anymore and probably never have. They don't see traffic volumes that warrant what one-ways do so well, which is move large volumes as quickly as possible. They don't have the appropriate environment or context. I know we've talked about context-sensitive solutions a lot on this podcast, and that just refers to the environment surrounding these streets. Are these streets doing what's appropriate for the area in which they are located? And the way that they function currently is not. And they don't provide any benefit. Like you said, there's no reason for them to be doing, to be handling traffic as one way as they currently are. In fact, they might be even delivering potentially negative outcomes when you think about wrong-way driving, which I unfortunately even experienced as most recently as last Wednesday morning downtown, was almost hit by somebody who just wanted to turn around and go the wrong way down Ashman to find a parking space. That's not acceptable. Confusion, you know, increased trip times. When you think about how unnecessary it is in these examples that you've shared to even spend that extra 2 to 3 minutes when it's not necessary to have one-way traffic through these areas. So what would a two-way traffic handling street on Ashman and Rod mean for the community? What does it mean for visitors? What does it mean for people who live along these corridors? And why is it important for businesses and for the growth of the community?
Sure, those are great questions. And I think that's some of the more consistent questions that we've received from community members that are unsure about this project is, you know, can the traffic be handled? And I think rightly, I'm a planner, and sometimes I have trouble visualizing what a change will look and feel like, even if I see a picture.
Sure.
And will it be safe? And will people be able to learn and understand it? As complicated as our current system is, and I think everyone from the most vocal opponents to this project on down agrees that our current circulation system in these areas is complicated. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone has ever actually disputed that. You know, there's a lack of intuitiveness to your ability to visit a business, because in most cases, to access a business, you have to travel one way, and then to leave that business, you have to have a completely different route. Mm-hmm. So you're using different streets in different directions in order to get to or from a business, which is just not very friendly to people who are trying to discover a new business or stop in on their way home to make a do a quick errand. All of which really matters for businesses. Businesses, like I said, in large part rely on convenience, and they do want to be visible and accessible to the community. For those who have trouble visualizing it or have concerns about safety, I think it's most valuable to look at streets that exist in Midland today that are similar to these streets, just similar to what's proposed in terms of a design for these streets, and go drive them yourself and get a feel for what that looks like. So I'll give you an example.
Sure.
So we do regular traffic counts on city streets. We have 4 count locations on the Rod and Ashman corridors that are subject to possible conversion to two-way traffic. The most heavily trafficked of those count areas is Rod Street, southwest of Saginaw Road.
Okay.
So kind of generally in the area of the post office.
Yep.
Around 7,300 trips in a day, an average day as of 2022. Most similar count in the city to that is East Ashman Street, west of Sweet Avenue. A segment of roadway that just reopened to the community this week in a two-way configuration that is nearly identical to what's proposed for Ashman and Rod Streets. not a segment of roadway that is noted for congestion, that's noted for a lack of safety. It's a road that students do have to cross to access both the elementary school located north of the corridor and the middle school north of the corridor, as well as the high school to the south. And so lots of pedestrian traffic. We have businesses on the corridor, lots of residential homes on the corridor that have to back in and out of driveways. And again, no complaints. We just reinvested in a full reconstruction of that roadway in a similar configuration to what's proposed here. If you look further down the list, Rod Street, northeast of Pine, carries just over 4,000 cars a day. West Sugnet Road, east of Orchard, is the most similar traffic condition across the city. West Sugnet Road, east of Orchard Drive, is not a high traffic street.
Right.
It's not an unsafe street. It permits two-way travel. And so, you know, for me, as I've looked at this situation over the past several months and engaged with the public and with the information that's available to us, I think it's really important to keep that context. We're talking about one-way patterns are a restriction on travel. It's telling folks that you cannot access this roadway except in one direction. There should be a high threshold to justify restricting people's freedom of movement through the community and businesses' freedom of access. And there just simply isn't one here. Mm-hmm. These roads can safely function and can adequately provide traffic flow in a two-way pattern. We didn't know that in 1958. Right. I think in 1958, we expected that in the future we would need three lanes of one-way traffic or travel in order to provide adequate travel flow conditions in the city. As you said, I don't think we've ever been in a position where those lanes were truly needed. And what we have instead is really excess capacity. We have a highway-type design running through these districts and through these neighborhoods that encourages fast-moving traffic because there's really no restriction in right. place to cause people to drive slowly. Certainly the design would appear to encourage fast driving. And we have lots of merging and other movements which can be dangerous and can create issues. And we have a real lack of convenience. The Indian and Buttles corridor, mm-hmm. you know, that's our other one-way system in town. Those streets are only one block apart. So it's about 300 to 400 feet between those streets. Ashman and Rod Street are at a minimum two blocks apart. Mm-hmm. And as you move into Center City, they're upwards of 1,000+ feet from each other. And so making a circulation movement where you go from one to the other is inconvenient. It adds time. And that's not, if it's 2 or 3 minutes per trip, okay, I understand that's not a huge inconvenience. But if you're doing that once a week, 52 weeks a year for 60 years, that's a lot of time right. that could be spent
yeah.
doing other things.
Yep.
That's a lot of road miles, even if it's in small increments, of wear and tear on our streets that's unnecessary to accommodate extra travel so that we can accommodate a one-way system.
Right. Yeah, when you put it in that context, even just time alone, it's very startling to consider that we are essentially restricting traffic movement and for absolutely no reason. That is what we found with this study. That's what we see almost daily on these streets, even if you just drive down them and experience them. Anyone that's living in the surrounding neighborhoods can see that as well. And I think to your point about safety, it's very interesting because we don't see people coming to public meetings clamoring for their neighborhood street to be made one way because it's too unsafe with two-way traffic. We don't see people coming to city council to ask for major streets to be turned into one-way traffic because two-way travel is too dangerous, too unsafe. They're not used to it. I think it's very natural for people who are drivers, whether they're visitors or residents, even children. You know, I have a 6-year-old at home. She knows that two-way traffic is just a normal part of life. So it's interesting to hear the concerns about safety when we know that the current configuration of these streets is probably lending itself a lot more to unsafe travel in addition to inconvenient travel versus a two-way traffic configuration. So I appreciate you mentioning that as well. So let's talk about decision making, because there was a lot of really good discussion, especially at the October 12th Planning Commission meeting, but at the Center City and DDA meetings as well, as these commissions and boards deliberated and talked through this project and what it meant to them and came to their decision. So I want people to understand how these decisions are made at the local government level. What I've heard many times over from residents on the city's social channels is, you know, the city isn't listening to the public because there are members of the community that say they don't like this. I know we've talked before about how staff can't ultimately just decide things without city council approval, right? And we can't speak to how city council ultimately makes their own voting decisions. But can you talk a little bit about how, you know, as a department head of a city department, how we as employees make decisions on what initiatives to pursue or recommend, and how important and how critical is public input in that decision making?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think public input is obviously a critical component of everything that we do, but it's not the only input. We know through any given process that we're going to hear from a very small fraction of the overall community.
Right.
And we create forums for public input that are broadly open because we understand that the decisions that are made for the city of Midland impact people beyond the city of Midland. There are people, thousands of people every day commuting into the city or accessing the city for shopping or other needs. And so we're happy to listen and hear from members of the community that are outside of the city of Midland as well. But that's just, like, again, one piece of that conversation. We've spent hundreds of hours meeting with residents and business owners in the community, reading emails and other correspondences that have come through. You know, I've read every correspondence we've ever received on this issue. I've been at all the public engagement sessions, certainly, to hear what is said. And that's part of the discussion and the conversation that takes place around these issues. You know, the number one thing I would say is we need to keep in mind that the decision makers here, and from council down, so council members, planning commission members, DDA members, Center City Authority members, these are people that live in Midland. These are people that, in many cases, own businesses in these areas or live in these areas themselves. So these are people that have a stake in this outcome. And the voices we've heard from so far have been largely unanimous that this is an important project that will lead to good things and positive changes for the community. I think one thing that anytime you talk about a project of any scope or scale, I think there's a tendency to set extremely high, unrealistic expectations for that project. And if the project's not going to meet those high expectations, then the project's not worth doing.
Right.
And the reality is that if you want to build a thriving, vibrant city that people want to live in, that has economic development taking place, new business growth, you need to make incremental change. Incremental change is the key to success. No one change, recruiting one business to your community, approving one housing development, retrofitting one street, none of those things in isolation is sufficient to create the type of community that Midlanders want. And I try to listen beyond just this project to what are Midlanders saying that they want for the community. And if you look holistically, when you ask people, not in a vacuum about one project, but more broadly about their goals, their desires, their hopes and dreams for this community, they want things like thriving business communities. They want new places to shop and dine. They want safer streets. They want things that this project can provide. Mm-hmm. So while I understand that folks are hesitant to change, I think that's natural in any community, but particularly in one that's as great as Midland. I think there's an understandable hesitancy to change something when you feel like what we do works. The way this community exists works. It's been a great place to live. I'm comfortable here. I'm happy here. But the reality is the city's been incrementally changing all along.
Sure.
And it will continue to incrementally change. Whether these streets remain one way or change a two-way, change will come. Change will continue to come. But this is an opportunity for us to be proactive about making sure that we're best positioned to be as successful as we can moving forward. And I really looked, again, strongly to folks who have invested their time, talents, and treasure into making these districts as successful as possible, believe very strongly that this project is part of the way that we accomplish that.
Sure. And I know that you personally have heard this a lot over the last couple of years. I know we've heard it at the staff level as well, because we just went through the currently proposed master plan process. And so much of those discussions were about What do we want for broader vision for the community? And I know there are several goals related specifically to the things that you just mentioned within that master plan. And by the way, if you have not checked that out yet, please do. It's now under the current public review period as released by City Council on October the 9th. So go ahead and check it out at MidlandCityModern.com. We will also link to that in the podcast episode as well. I think it's also great that you mentioned that, you know, these people that are on the boards and commissions and even City Council, they have an invested stake in these types of projects. I know we've heard before, you know, how many of these people on these boards and commissions are business owners in this area. Some of them, it's a requirement to be on that board, is you have to have a vested investment and an invested stake in these business districts. And that's what we want. We want people who care about the community, are invested in its current and future successes. And that's why we want to capture all of that public opinion as much as we can, both from the people who live here, people who visit here, and obviously the people that are investing in this community to try to make it a better place. So we're going to stop for just a minute and take a quick break, and we will come back with more on Ashman and Rod in just a moment. Streets. I'm here with City Director of Planning and Community Development, Jacob Kane, as we discuss the Ashman and Rod 2A Restoration Initiative that's currently being pursued by the city and will be reviewed by City Council for the final time in November 2023. So, Jacob, we were just talking about all the factors we use as a staff to consider when we're pursuing initiatives kind of like this restoration or other projects community-wide. And I think the way decisions are made is so important for residents to understand. We've had a lot of residents ask, well, why is this not being put on a ballot? Why is this not a community-wide vote? Why can't we just vote? I'm not going to get too into the weeds on election law and how that works because it doesn't really qualify for a ballot initiative. But even if that were an option, I want to talk about why we, as well as most other government organizations, don't do that with projects of this scope. I know from a communications perspective alone, because that's what y'all pay me to do, simply getting a yes or no answer from someone without any context behind their concerns, their likes, their dislikes, what their fears are, it's not helpful for us to make decisions because you don't get actionable information that can solve a problem. Can you talk a little bit more about why something like this would be dangerous to have as a community-wide vote?
Well, I mean, I would just simply say that it's a representative government, and so the voices of the community are expressed through their votes for council people who represent them, and that's a really good system that enables us to have, you know, five folks that are both able to dedicate the time and talents necessary to reflect on all the information that needs to be reflected on for good decision making, as well as to be engaged with their constituents and be accountable to them with their decision making. So I have no doubt that all five of our council members will be doing all of those things, taking the issue seriously, looking at all of the information that's available to them, including what they've heard from their constituents to make a final decision. But representative government also requires an ability to look beyond the present and into the future. And so we'll certainly encourage council to be thinking not just short term, but also long term about how projects like this can potentially be beneficial for the future of the community. That's just how these things typically roll. I would also just add that it's very atypical to have the level of a public engagement on a transportation project, especially one of this scope, as we've had here. We have dozens of transportation projects that are taking place every year in Midland, and the vast majority, the overwhelming 99% of those projects, the only public engagement that takes place is during our capital improvement plan and budgeting process. Mm-hmm. And if you've been to those public hearings, they're typically pretty quiet. We don't hear from the public very much about those matters. And so this is the exception to the rule, where an exceptional effort has been made to give the public an opportunity to not only learn about the project, but also to have their voices heard. And so I would push back very strongly on any perception that the public hasn't had a chance to engage on this project. Sure. Because they've had an unprecedented opportunity to engage on this project that's completely different from how we typically approach road projects. Because road projects are, it has a lot of technical detail to it. You know, typically we have traffic engineers and others that are qualified to make these kind of decisions, making these decisions themselves without any sort of extensive public engagement. In this case, we've had both. We've had the opportunity to have that public perspective, or technical perspective rather, as well as an abundance of public engagement and input. And I think that's ultimately going to position City Council to make the best possible decision.
Sure. So another concern that I wanted to talk about that I've heard from my interactions through the city's social channels is that the money that this restoration would require could be better used somewhere else. I want to talk about this because I went into communications because I don't like math and I don't like the budgeting process a whole lot, I'll be quite honest. But I think it's important people understand where these funds that would be used if a restoration was approved would come from and how they can be used. Where would we get these funds from, and what are our limitations in terms of spending them?
Yeah, so you put simply, every dollar that the City of Midland spends is not interchangeable with every other dollar. So we have a variety of funding sources. General fund dollars are generally our most flexible dollar mm-hmm. that we can spend, and those are typically the funds that are coming in through local property tax or revenue sharing from the state. We have other sources of state-shared revenue, like our Act 51 dollars that are specifically for transportation projects, and very narrowly so. We've got local millages, and those millage dollars mm-hmm. obviously have to be spent in certain ways. And then we have enterprise funds, so things like when you pay your water bill, those water bill payments are helping to keep that water system going. They're not designed to be used on other projects of the city. And sure. So it's not ever a one-to-one trade-off. We know that this project is really in the scheme of a municipal budget. This is a very minor line item on the city's budget, and it's a very minor line item on the city's transportation budget overall.
Okay.
We're talking, you know, less than 1% over the six-year plan for transportation projects. And so a very modest amount of spending. And I would really argue it's an investment. So we have two tax increment districts, boards whose job it is to grow the tax base of the city, which means more revenue for the city, stating emphatically that this is a good investment. This is money that will help to build more wealth in this community locally. These are primarily small business owners too. So we're not talking about national chains. We're talking about folks that live in this community, that they're sponsoring Little League, they're putting in the time and effort to make a variety of things in this community work well. And they believe that this will enable them to do even more and have even more impact, positive impact on our community. And so when you think of it as an investment, I think it's much easier to see why this project is a good use of taxpayer dollars.
Sure. And if you want to take a look at our capital improvement plan and see what different projects we have going on for the next 6 years, like Jacob said, this is a very, very small component of that plan. You can visit cityofmidlandmi.gov/planning. That is all out there. This does come back to City Council every year at some point for review, and we'll link to it on the episode of this podcast as well, so you can take a look at that. So you mentioned how the DDA and CCA have both reviewed this and consider this to be a good investment in the future of these districts. There's a lot of projects coming up that are beneficial to the entire community. We've got phase two of the downtown redevelopment. We have phase two, which includes the circle of the Center City redevelopment plan. We also have the Buttles and Indian Corridor improvement project coming in a couple of years. So the time is now for us to really focus on this. I know that has been something people have asked. If it's functioned, quote unquote, so well for the last 50 to 60 years, why are you wanting to change it all of a sudden? This is something that we now have the opportunity to do because these streets are such a critical part of this process. So when we anticipate a final decision on this initiative, we're thinking November 13th. That's a Monday, and that will be the City Council meeting, the first meeting in November for City Council. What will City Council be considering when they're looking at this project again at this meeting? And if there is a decision at that point to restore two-way traffic, what should residents expect to see happen after that point?
Sure. So on November 13th, I expect that, building on the record of information that's already been shared with City Council previously, we'll be bringing back those recommendations officially from the Center City Authority, the Downtown Development Authority, and the Planning Commission, as well as the Downtown Business Association, which also weighed in on this project in support. And so bringing those items forward for Council's consideration, along with the remaining record on the project and any additional public comment that's come in up to now, as well as now through the meeting on November the 13th. Moving forward, as you said, one of the reasons why this project is being discussed at all at this particular moment is because we've got multiple other projects that are proposed along the corridors, for which knowing the traffic alignment of these corridors is necessary to do final design. And more importantly, part of the reason why communities have the capital improvement plan we were just speaking about is because it's important to coordinate projects so that we can efficiently use local government resources. So just as a broad example, if the water department has a line that they need to replace and the engineering department has a street they need to replace, it's good to know that, and it's good to coordinate that so that we're not removing a recently constructed street a few years later to replace a water line. We want to do those things together when it's most cost effective. And the same applies here. It'll be most cost effective for the community in the long run, as well as less inconvenient for the community in the long run, if we can implement a change in traffic flow in these corridors in conjunction with one or more other projects that are already programmed. But more importantly, so that we can design these projects in a manner where they function in the best manner possible. And certainly knowing that now will enable us to do that.
Yes. And I just want to reiterate again, I know we discussed this back in April, but there are no final engineering designs at this point for Ashman and Rod. Those would be completed after we would know what direction we were heading and would influence both the downtown and Center City projects, as well as any additional projects through the capital improvement plan that would occur in that time frame. So we don't have anything decided just yet. But on the flip side, the City Council could decide not to authorize moving forward with the two-way traffic restoration. So if that is the decision, especially knowing that we don't have any final designs at this time, what happens? Are there ways that we can still satisfy some of the goals and some of the concerns that we've had brought forth to us, identified through this process, but keep the streets one way?
Sure. So I think on some of the things we've heard and some of the things we've talked about in terms of advantages to a two-way system, there's limited options to address connectivity and ease of navigation through these areas without making this conversion happen. There's also a limited menu of options to reduce speeds. The current design just doesn't give us a lot of opportunities. We've heard ideas pitched like having police officers present to do more enforcement, which, while that's a good thing, that's not a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week way of reducing speeds, nor is just simply reposting speed limits. A lower speed limit doesn't encourage people to drive slower. Road design encourages people to drive slower. So some of those opportunities are just not going to be on the table with a one-way design. We will still be working on non-motorized connectivity either way, because as we've mentioned, I think probably in the earlier podcast, we currently don't have a non-motorized connection between downtown and Center City that's direct. Both non-motorized systems consist of a shared lane in the current road system, and they end at their northernmost point at Nelson Street. So we have no non-motorized connection north of Nelson into the Circle and Center City areas. And so we'd be continuing to look at that. We know there's excess capacity on these roads as designed, so there'll certainly be opportunities there. One thing that we haven't talked about yet that the city is engaged with the Midland Area Transportation Study on a analysis using federal dollars of a potential non-motorized enhancement along Rod Street from downtown to Center City. So this would be above and beyond anything that we could implement through this two-way conversion project to provide an even higher quality bicycling facility through that area. So that project will be moving forward over the next year. That's something we'll be doing whether or not a two-way conversion is authorized by City Council. That will hopefully help to address the current lack of safe non-motorized connectivity through the corridors.
Nice. And I know from attending the open houses and speaking to some of the people that attended those, non-motorized transportation was a huge, huge topic of conversation at those open houses. It was our most generating comments on the public survey that was done through East City Hall as well, which you can see all of those comments on the podcast website. So I know there'll be a lot of people that are really looking forward to what we can do with that. So again, the Ashman and Rod 2A restoration will return to City Council on November 13th for an anticipated final deliberation and decision. So if you feel passionately about this project, you love where it's going, you have concerns you'd like to see addressed, we really recommend you reaching out to us or to your City Council representative. Like we mentioned earlier, they are your voting representative related to city-related issues. So if you don't know who that is, or you have questions for us, questions staff can address, you can email cityhall@midland-mi.org. We'll get you where you need to go. all the meeting videos that we talked about earlier, the public input collected, any items we talked about today can all be found at cityofmidlandmi.gov/ashmanrod, and we'll link to it here on the podcast website as well. Jacob, thank you again for joining me today. Hopefully we will have some more to talk about next month. And you can subscribe to get updates on new episodes on the City of Midland YouTube channel or on your podcast platform of choice under MCTV Network Government Affairs. So that's all for this installment, but we'll be back soon with another episode and more updates on the Buttles and Indian Corridor Improvement Project and other infrastructure in our community. See you soon, and slow down. This has been Word on the Streets, a podcast created by the City of Midland, Michigan, and produced by the MCTV Network. For more information on this podcast or to learn more about the Buttles and Indian Corridor Improvement Project, visit cityofmidlandmi.gov/corridors.